Hey, you there, buddy?
Yes, I am.
Alright. This is a hell of a setup I've got going right now. Two instances of Skype, brought myself in through on my cell phone through Skype, and you in through Skype. What I've got going with Skype is, there's a program out there called Virtual Audio Cable. And one instance of Skype I run just per normal. Mm-hmm. Second one, I fire it up, and with virtual audio cables running, I create basically a audio pass-through through it. And then in Audacity, which I also have running right now, I take the audio output of Skype as the audio input to Audacity, audio output of Audacity as audio input to Skype. And then I invite people into a conference so you can have four people in a conference using this method. I'm going to do my next episode plot over it.
Sounds interesting.
And sound quality sounds halfway decent so far.
Yeah, I've noticed once you get, more than two people or so trying to talk at once, it starts to get crazy.
Yeah. Well, we've got four people in a Skype conference right now, so to speak, so... Well, as far as Skype's concerned.
Yeah.
And now for part of why I was wanting to get you on. You mind doing kind of an interview, so to speak?
Sure.
Alright. Well, welcome to the Dragon's Lair. It's one of the things I'm trying to do with my show on Podcast Incubator. So, why don't you tell us a little bit about you? Basically, how you got started and everything.
Well, back in probably 10th or 11th grade, I used to do this stuff called reading. And I read a book called The Blue Nowhere, which is it's by a guy named Jeffrey Deaver, a really good author. You should check out the book. But it's one of those books about a hacker that's, it's really way blown out of proportion, who does, changes the street lights and all that fun stuff throughout the book. But, I read it, and I was like, holy shit, this is the coolest thing ever. And, granted, now I've kind of realized that, I've realized the difference between fact and fiction. But, that kind of set the way for it, and then, afterwards, I decided that I was going to learn how to, I got really into I learned the NAM programming code for Nokia cell phones, and I was like, holy shit, I'm elite now. And it just kind of rolled from there.
Cool. So how did an interest in hacking go to an interest in freaking?
I think what it was is, the best way I can describe it is that I think better in... I guess you could call it phone language, for lack of a better term. I can't think in, programming languages like some people can. Some people can have an idea in their head for an awesome program they want to make, and they just make it. And it's like, they have that kind of thinking. But my brain doesn't work that way. It's just, I found phones, and I realized that this is something cool. This is something tangible that I can have. And... I can't so much make... I can make boxes or whatever, but I can't so much make cool things for this phone to do, but I can find all this cool stuff for the phone to do. I can find all this stuff that the phone can do that I never knew about before. And, it's one of those things that you think about the phone, and a lot of people think about a phone as, it's just the phone. I've used the phone my whole life. It's like my washing machine. But they don't realize that, the phone is one of the most important tools in the world. The invention of the phone shaped what the world is now.
Oh, it definitely changed the landscape of reality as we know it. I would really hate to conceive what life in the world would be now without such a rapid means of communication.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the telegraph went a long way to changing things, but changing it to voice was just a... went so much further.
Yeah, I mean, it's to be able to pick up the phone and call, you know, well, at that point in time, not anywhere in the world, but to be call even the person across town, to call the butcher shop and ask them if your, you know, if your meat is ready for you to come pick up yet, instead of having...
Call across town and call the doctor and say, my daughter's sick.
Yeah. Instead of having to literally take your child or whatever, put them, you know, if you own a car at this point in time, and take them across town, you can say, I have an emergency. I need help here. I can't get there and get help and bring it back.
Right. So how does VoIP strike your interest at this point?
It strikes my interest, but at the same time, it's kind of... Like I said, I mean, like, I don't think in terms of computers. And I mean, while I think VoIP is an awesome thing, and I love to play with, you know, like Skype, like I'm doing right now, but I can't get into it as much as I do other things, you know?
One of the big people I've seen pushing VoIP is actually a lot of old-school freaks who...
Oh, yeah.
With the advent of Asterix, they've seen the dawning of the light again for them.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's definitely, like, I mean, I look at VoIP and I say, that is the next thing, you know? I mean, that's where things are going. Whether or not, you know, phone companies want to admit it, you know, I mean, companies like Vonage are right now making phone companies piss themselves. Because they're offering... a pretty good service. I mean, Vonage isn't the best, but they're offering it cheap. And that's the bottom line. They're offering cheap, and that's going to make a lot of people change over.
Yeah, and, I mean, they wouldn't be wanting to put in, you know, in some respects, tiered internet and degrade the service of groups like Vonage if they didn't think there was an issue with it. If they thought it was just going to be a little play toy for people, they never consider degrading its service.
Yeah.
There was some news a while back that I caught about some company, I don't remember which telco it was, but when a guy plugged his Vonage adapter in, his ping ratio went to astronomical levels.
Yeah.
And as soon as he unplugged the box, he nice and clear on the network again.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I think that, like I said, I think that really voice over IP is going to be, it's just a matter of time before the telcos finally break down and realize, crap, you know, we instead of hearing about this cool new technology and moving on it then, we said, oh, that's not going to be anything, and then we missed the boat.
Well, and I think AT&T saw the writing a little before most. Because they've got an adapter out like Vonage, if I'm not mistaken.
I mean, it's getting to the point right now. I read an article previously about I want to say it was power companies. Maybe it wasn't phone service, but internet service. I was reading an article about
over power.
Yeah, and I mean, there's enough technology out like that for not only power companies to start saying, hey, I can offer you internet connection, and they can very well, you know, say, hey, they've already got all the stuff existing in the house, so it's not like they really have to go and wire the nation. They can just say, hey, here's this broadband, and then if they were so inclined, they could turn right around and say, hey, here's this voice over IP service that we're offering.
Yep. But there's one group fighting broadband over power right now as it exists. And I understand their point. I used to be a card-carrying member, but I let my license lapse, and that's the amateur radio guys.
Yeah.
and I don't blame them. It's injecting a lot of undue interference into the lines right now. So that technology's got a little ways to go.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about your show.
Well, I do a weekly webcast, whatever you want to call it, a webcast, a podcast.
Media cast.
Yes, I do internet media. It's a weekly show. It's called Belcore Radio, and it sometimes is about telephones. Anytime we can talk about phones on the show, we do, but generally, it's a lot of, a lot of ranting. A lot of ranting. Not so much
lately. Especially about the promised future we have yet to see.
Yes, I am a big advocate of the future that was on TV when I was a child. And I was told back in 1986 or so that...
Can you repeat that year?
1986, I'm going to say. I'm not sure. Somewhere around there. But I was told back then that probably around year 2010... there was going to be flying cars, and we were going to have computers embedded into our brains, and it was just going to be a perfect world. And I've seen lately that it's not going to go that way, and it kind of upsets me, because we have technology right now that if it wasn't being used for the purposes of, like, digital rights management, we have enough smart people and enough, available technology that we could really put a lot of this technology to use to make these cool things that, we've always heard about when we were kids.
Yeah, I definitely agree. One of my favorite clips I ever saw, if you ever watched Clerks, there's a deleted scene out of that during the point when they're traveling from the store to the funeral they go to, and they're sitting there in the car talking about the flying car. One of the funniest rants I have ever heard, and one of the worst things I've ever heard involving a German man. So if you ever get a chance, track it down. I think you can actually find it on the USU website, possibly.
Yeah. I don't think I'm familiar with that one. I've seen the rest of the movie. I guess I missed the deleted scenes, but...
I think it's a deleted scene they only put on the internet. So what do you see as the future of Belcore Radio at this point?
Oh, that's a tough one. I don't know. I mean, we're still going strong. I'm trying to work my schedule around doing the show at the moment, but it's getting stronger. We're getting a lot more guest hosts that are pretty smart people. We've had like Alonka Dunnan came on the show, and we're gonna have I'm trying to get in touch with the guy who runs the Homebrew Mobile Phone Club.
I just ran across that. That, yeah, I have to say, is the most interesting thing I've seen in about a year and a half outside of Asterix.
Yeah, I shot him an email a couple days ago. I haven't heard back from him yet. I'm hoping I will. But, chances are he'll probably hear the show and hear, 50% of what we talk about is, porn and gay sex. So... I'm hoping that he'll come on the show, because I think that would be really cool. I'd love to have, a chat with him, but,
Well, as much as you and Mesa talk about the porn, maybe you should make a review section about porn one of these days. Porn for freaks. But the connotations of that one are horrible.
Yeah. Well, I think we've already had similar things to this, but, I've had a lot of talks about porn that I found on the internet that involves girls with phones and things like that that I thought was funny, but
I think I've missed those.
Yeah,
I'll have to go back and listen to them again.
it was kind of, I put a question out to the listeners when I talked about it, because when I saw the pictures, what it was is it was two girls, you know, doing their thing in a payphone booth. And the whole time I'm looking at these pictures, all I'm looking at is the payphone. And, like, I'm, like, squinting, trying to read information on the information plate. And I was like, it scared me. And so I was like, I had to ask the listeners, I was like, am I just going nuts? Have I gotten, like, too obsessed with phones here? And from what I've gathered, nobody listens to the show, because I got no replies from that.
Well, what episode would you think that was, maybe?
Oh, God, I have no idea.
Maybe one of the first half dozen?
Probably somewhere between episode 12 and episode 19. I'm not sure, to be honest with you, but...
I know I've listened to about a half a dozen episodes of your show so far, or a dozen probably. And the post office is one of the things that I wish the future would deliver soon, because they never did give me that disc that you tried to send me.
Yeah, for some reason the post office, I'm assuming that it's, since it's after 9/11, and I don't really like putting my address on envelopes for their return address, so a lot of the stuff that I've sent out hasn't gotten to people, and I'm assuming that's what it is. I think that they're just like, well, I don't know what the hell this is, so we're just not going to send it, and they probably just throw it in the garbage. I'm working on trying to get like a P.O. box or something, so that way I can put an address on there, a return address, just in case. But at this point in time, we've had quite a few people complain about not getting stuff that they won in our contests. So,
well, for me, when I won, I have to say I was just happy the fact that I pulled it off, and then the pissing rights behind it of you asking me, how'd I find the answer so quickly and where? And I think it still surprised you the answer was actually in Wikipedia.
I think actually that's where I got it from.
So what are some of the other things that drives your curiosity besides just phones?
Oh, man. Well, I'm a big fan of, at the moment, I've been getting really into networking a lot because of a presentation that Iron Geek did at Nauticon about, hacking network printers. And so I started, you know, I went to work like the day after Nauticon and sat down at the computers and just, that's all I did for like 4 hours. It's just like send
what
print jobs.
What kind of success did you get from that?
Well, I mean, it's all fairly simple stuff. I mean, like with Jet Direct boxes made by HP, once you have the IP, you can telnet into it, and you can send. I think if you telnet on port 9100, you can send, you know, commands to it to, you know, print out anything you type that doesn't have a specific command in front of it will print out. So I would telnet into it, and I would type a message to people, and I would print it. And then, so while people are going to the printer at work to get some stuff, they'll look through, and it's like, okay, here's my paper, here's my paper, here's my paper. Oh, and apparently this guy thinks I'm an asshole. And I mean, it was fun stuff. I mean, it's silly crap, but...
Did you have any success with displaying stuff on the LCD?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's all really simple. Like, once you get the... Like, once you figure out what you're doing... I mean, I think the command for displaying... For the LCD display, it's... all in caps lock, it's... The @, it's @PJL... Space... RDYMSG... And then equal sign, and then whatever you want to type in, or whatever you want it to say in quotes, and then you do control right bracket quit enter. I'm sure that was very entertaining for everyone to listen to, but
Well, Iron Geek's an entertaining person, and a lot of people enjoy listening to you, so across the two, I'm sure someone will be out there trying to pwn the new printers come tomorrow.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. It takes... The one thing about it is that by default on Windows boxes, when you open Command Prompt, it has Echo turned off. So when you tell it into it as you're typing what you want it to say on the screen, you can't see what you're typing. So it took me a while to get in the habit of making sure that I typed, like, everything perfectly. Because, you know, I'd type, like, you know, I'd type something, I don't know, if we're trying to think of a good example. Like, I'd type, you know, you suck or something on the to show up on the LCD display, and I'd go up there to look at it to see if it worked. And it'd be like, YOLUSUCVKI. Just because, like, you know, trying to type it fast, because I'm sitting, you know, in some random person's cube. And then I'd end up screwing it up somehow. But either way, I mean, it's an unbelievable amount of fun when you have nothing else better to do.
Nothing better to do while you're at work being paid than to pwn their printers.
Basically.
I remember recently you were talking about starting to play with Linux some more on your machines.
Yeah. I had for a while, I had put a SUSE 9 on my laptop. I had dual booted it. And my laptop died shortly after for hardware reasons. Basically, someone stepped on it, and it wouldn't turn on after that. So I just recently bought a new laptop, and right now it's just running Windows XP, but out the other day to the bookstore and saw the latest, Linux Format, I think it is, magazine. And they do, like, a special, like, every other month that is, they'll give you, like, 5 CDs with just a specific distribution and, like, a bunch of software for it. And then
lately they've been releasing DVD.
Yeah.
Which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, but what I like about the about these special issues, more specifically than that they give you the distro, is that the entire magazine, that entire issue of the magazine, is dedicated to installing that distribution, configuring that distribution, and nothing but that distribution.
I've seen those before, and definitely, I agree that's a great thing on their part. I went through some pains myself with my laptop recently, and some people, well within their rights, told me I was crazy when I started installing Gentoo on a Pentium 2 233 megahertz laptop.
Yeah.
It took me about 5 days to get it to where I had Fluxbox running.
Yeah, the newest issue of the magazine came out. It's got a Fedora Core 5, and so I figured I'll give it a shot, see how I like it. Because for a Linux noob, I'm willing to try anything.
Yeah. The one thing I'll say is the documentation and just the installers are getting so much better. I remember, about 2-3 years ago, I tried Linux for the first time. And about a month later, I finally had a crotchety working system running supposedly, at the time, one of the easiest, Mandrake. So, I mean, when I can turn around at this point and off of documentation install, you know, is what I'd still consider a complete new Gentoo, I'd say people are starting to realize they need to step up their work, and they're bringing it.
Yeah. I don't know, Linux is still just one of those kind of foreign things to me, just because, like I said, I mean, like I said previously, I use phones. And I use a computer to, you know, get online and get on IRC.
And to get your phone numbers for your
show. Yeah, and look up things for about phones, so.
What is probably the most interesting thing, going back to phones at this point, that you have discovered, not just you found someone else's number or someone else's how-to, but...
Well, I mean, lately, what with doing, you know, I just started a new job recently and going to school and then doing my radio show, I haven't had a whole lot of time to do a lot of phone freaking, but I did discover recently, well, I don't want to say I discovered it because, you know, it's just sitting out there waiting for somebody, but in Georgia... Well,
for your own devices, you discovered it versus someone else giving you the discovery.
Yeah. In the state of Georgia, they just implemented a new area code overlay. It's the 762 area code. And, like, as soon as somebody posted it online, and they're like, yeah, it's going to happen on May 16th. I was like, hell yeah. I'm going to be calling, like, nonstop that day. And turns out, I didn't think about it at the time, but they implemented the 762 area code that day, but they weren't going to be adding numbers to it immediately that day. It's just, like, over time, when as people need numbers, they're going to put them in 762 instead of 706. And so I'm calling and calling, and I'm like, well, damn, there is nothing active in the whole area code. Or at least in anything that I called. And finally, I found the test number that they set up. It's the NPA test number, so that when your businesses can call it and make sure that their equipment is working right in the new area code. And it basically just says, hey, this is the test number, and it tells you your LATA code.
You want to share that number with the freaks?
Well, actually, I don't know if I'll be able to do it since we're conferenced right now. I was going to say I can dial it up, but if you want to dial it up and see if we can get it.
Well, part of the reason we're recording the way we are is so I can be outside on my patio while my wife is sitting in on playing on her computer, and I'm not... But if you want and share that number, I will call it up and I will add it as the ending loop for this.
Well, definitely. Then the number is 762-222-7777.
And folks, you heard that discovery by Ponyboy here first. Wow, cheesy already. And it's my first show. So is there anything else you'd like to share with us today, or?
I can't really think of anything at the moment. I hope he doesn't mind me saying this. I'm not going to spill the beans too much, but there's going to be an awesome show coming out sometime soon, hopefully, that I was talking to my friend Icon about, and if you're into phones, you will really dig this show. But that's all I'm going to say about it at this point in time. So.
Well, how about this, then? After that show releases, if you are a part of that show or if you want to talk about it some more, we'll get you back on.
Excellent.
All right. So, any rant-worthy things today? The RIAA is too easy of a target for this show.
Yeah. Well, that's my general rant. I mean, I don't really know.
One of the best things I've heard recently, I'll say, is hardware manufacturers for TVs and high-def TVs, high-def DVD players are talking like they may not support HDCP via HDMI until at least 2010 or 2012. And as much as I hate them, or annoyed by them, Microsoft is one of the people backing this move. So it was actually nice to hear where some groups are talking about at least delaying any kind of copy protection.
Yeah. I mean, any kind of... Personally, I mean, I am a musician, in a sense. And I think that digital rights management is the worst idea ever for the music industry and for the film industry and for basically any industry, because all it does is A, if you put DRM, there's several things. You put digital rights management on a song or on some music or something. Generally speaking, what DRM today means is something that will fuck people's computers up if they download it. That's how it's... Right. I mean, it sucks that it's gotten to that point, but that A puts all...
There's one I'll counter on, but it still has its issues, and that's the Fair Play DRM, I think, is probably the least restrictive. And for most people, probably they'll never see it being an issue.
Yeah. It's, I mean, like, I know for a fact, because, I mean, it's not just, you know, people at home that download music, you know? I mean, like, the Sony rootkit issue that was going on. I work at an insurance company that's a pretty big insurance company. I'm not going to say the name, but it's a pretty big insurance company.
Yeah, we don't need to be dropping your docs.
Yeah. And I know for a fact, because I do IT work, I know for a fact that people at my work illegally download things on their work computers. And so if companies are putting out, you know, like if Sony's putting out music that's got, you know, some kind of malicious code embedded into it, or putting it on their CDs or something, and people are bringing it into a large financial institution and trying to rip the stuff, and if something happens to that computer, that leaves a huge security hole in a lot of people's lives.
Yeah, and with some of the regulations behind insurance companies, that's pretty bad.
Yeah. I mean, it makes me worried, I guess, is the best way. Because, I mean, it seems like companies are, you know, they see something that looks, you know, like it will deter people from, you know, pirating or whatever, and they're like, that's what we're going to use. It's like, oh, wow, what, all these CDs are going to come with, you know, bombs that explode when you put them in a computer? Yeah, that sounds like a great idea. Sure, that'll keep people from pirating. And yeah, it will, but it will also kill people, probably. I mean, that's, you know, happening anytime
soon. You've brought them up before, but there's the group in Canada of Canadian musicians who I think they're doing, you know, one of the more admirable things right now, and they're just throwing the finger to their own recording industry and starting their own.
Exactly.
And Pearl Jam's doing something interesting right now. They're not one of the biggest names out right now, but for like the next 2 or 3 days, if you go to their website, you can download their latest music video under a Creative Commons license. And all versions downloaded during this time will be under the Creative Commons license, but at the end of that, they'll move it behind a paywall.
Yeah, but you can still technically distribute.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's just a beautiful thing, I think.
That is. I mean, that, like, granted, I can understand them wanting to make money off of what they do. I mean, because it's their job. And if I could make money off of, you know, music that I made, I would do it. But I think that it's really cool that they're, you know, they're showing, hey, you know, we're making this so that people will enjoy it more so than so we can make a lot of money.
Yeah.
So here you go and enjoy it. If you like it, you can pay for it.
Are you aware of Alex Lindsay of the Pixel Core?
Never heard of it. Him.
He also shows up on This Week in Tech. He does a show on the twit.tv network, This Week in Media. He's heavily involved with he used to work for LucasArts,
mm-hmm.
and he uses Photoshop heavily and is pretty well known for being one of the, you know, people well versed in Photoshop.
Yeah.
Well, he's talked on several occasions on computer software of these high-end programs that they just do everything they can to lock them down. And he said from his own experience, and I've seen it in some respects myself, the programs that are locked down the hardest tend to die.
Oh, yeah. Because generally speaking, good programs like that, like Photoshop, people like to be able to use them how they need to. If you start locking things down, and trying to keep people from doing things, then they're not going to want to use what you're making.
Which I think Photoshop is, or Adobe is trying to get around that, because they now offer Photoshop Essential and then Adobe Photoshop CS. So they're trying to put out a real low level, easily accessible to anyone. But at that point, I'd say, why aren't you using GIMP Shop?
Yeah.
Are you aware of that program at all, or?
I've never heard of GIMP Shop. I've heard of GIMP, but never heard of GIMP Shop.
Go to plasticbugs.com, if I'm not mistaken. And it's where the guy has taken a version of the GIMP and reworked a lot of the menus to where they're Adobe Photoshop menus, basically.
Awesome.
So, one of the biggest bridges I've heard from people is going from Photoshop to GIMP. You know, GIMP is made by, a bunch of computer programmers who just haven't given a huge nod towards usability in some respects, and some people might argue that with me.
But now they have no excuse.
Yeah. Now, using GIMP Shop, someone who's used to Adobe Photoshop could step across much easier. And then some of the higher-end stuff that GIMP Shop or GIMP has that Photoshop doesn't is still there when you're ready for it. Well, is there anything you'd like to tell everyone in closing?
You put me on the spot here. Well, if you don't mind me stealing a line from my show, keep hacking, keep freaking, and keep having fun.
And any shouts to anyone tonight?
Yeah, actually, I want to give shouts to Vic Vandal, who is one of the guys who's organizing CarolinaCon this year. And he's really going out of his way to try and help me get some vendor space there. So big props to Vic.
Right on. Tonight, I think we'll go with just make it unanimous and easy. Everyone in Poundin' Phenomicon. And for the Jokers in Poundin' Rev as well. And, in fact, let's steal the closing line from Ben Rev tonight, because I just feel like it. See you all same hack channel.
Same hack time?
Yep. Good night, folks. All right, Phony Boy, I'm going to shut it off here.
Awesome.
And I will catch you on IRC.
All right, man.
Later.
Later.